Well, let's go back to Esther. We're in chapter 7 now. And we're asking the question in chapter 7, and really of the whole book of Esther, who is the hero? Because we're all needing a hero. We're all looking for a hero. There are so many problems in our world, so many problems in our lives. And who is the hero? Who's going to fix them? Who's fixing the climate? Who's fixing pollution? Who's fixing the economy? Or the mental health crisis? Or the NHS? Or the war in Ukraine? Or the genocides that are taking place? Or the trade wars? Or the potholes in the roads? Or maybe just your team's ailing fortunes? Or your own personal challenges? Whatever. Who's your hero? Who's coming to your rescue? And if they haven't come yet, who are you hoping will come to your rescue? We all look for heroes in the world, and you know, we put a lot of expectation on the people that we do elect, or the people that we do choose to be our leaders, people who are chosen to manage organizations or sports teams or whatever. We put incredible expectation. We're always looking for people to work almost superhuman, Superman type miracles in order to rescue situations. Well, in the book of Esther, there are definitely some heroic acts and some very anti-heroic, some very criminal and desperate acts. Who is the hero in the book of Esther? That's my question today. We read in chapter 7. Chapter 7 is likely the dramatic high point of the book. We said maybe that beginning of chapter 6, where the king can't sleep, maybe the kind of pivot, the turning point in the story. But chapter 7 is the dramatic highlight, the point that brings things really into a stark reality of confrontation, and especially Esther pleading with the king, confronting Haman. Esther's plan to plead on behalf of her people against Haman's plan to destroy the Jewish people across the Persian Empire, genocide indeed, is that she will approach the king, and if he is accepting of her, she will invite him to a banquet. And if he's happy at the banquet, we'll invite him to another banquet. And that's where we're at just now in the story. She's a very patient and a very wise woman in the way that she approaches things. And she uses all the tools that are at her disposal in order to bring King Xerxes round to sparing her people. So, who is the hero? Is it Haman? Well, Esther says it all, really. The adversary and enemy is this vile Haman. Haman is definitely not the hero in the story. But what about King Xerxes? I mean, we've found it hard to see redeeming features in Xerxes. He embodies all the worst of dictatorship, of character flaws. He's really a weak man. He's easily led, easily tempted, and really his intimate encounters with women and with wine are the thing that seem to dominate his life. He does have the courage, when called to it, to hang the man who the day before was his best pal. Well, maybe they weren't best pals, but certainly his second in command. Harbona says there's a gallows being erected by Haman to hang Mordecai. Hang him on it. There's one of the very few occasions in the book that the king seems to make a decision without asking someone else what to do. Hang him on it. So he does have that courage to recognize the way things are and where justice lies. But he doesn't really seem to recognize that it's because of his character weakness that the whole situation's arisen. If he had just asked some questions and said to him, why do you want to hang these people? Who are these people anyway? Remember, it didn't even name the people. Who are these people you want to destroy rather than hang? Hang Mordecai and his people. Who are these people? He didn't even ask that. And he doesn't seem to recognize it's really his fault, because he handed over his signet ring of authority to Haman to seal the documents that would go out into the empire in all the different languages, condemning to death the Jewish people throughout the empire. But in any case, and that was just a few weeks previous to where we're at now, did Xerxes think that there would be no consequence to wiping out an entire people across his empire? Xerxes is no hero. So we're going to have to look somewhere else. We could look to Mordecai. He's not actually really featured in chapter 7 here, but he has been active very much before here. And if you look at the very end of the book of Esther, the book of Esther closes with Mordecai's name up in neon. Mordecai the Jew was second in rank to King Xerxes, preeminent among the Jews, held in high esteem by his many fellow Jews because he worked for the good of his people and spoke up for the welfare of all the Jews. That's how the book ends. It seems almost there the book is presenting Mordecai as the hero. And Mordecai does obviously do some very heroic things. He is the man who uses his position at the gate as some kind of figure in the administration of Xerxes to influence things and to influence the queen, particularly his cousin. And when called to higher leadership, he is statesmanlike, he's decisive. And of course, he uncovered the assassination plot that saved the king's life, and actually the story depends on that too. He persuades his cousin Esther to act at the risk of her own life for the sake of her people. But Mordecai's not the one to bring the final showdown in the story. So although he's right up there, and you might call him a hero, he doesn't seem to be the hero in the story. So what about Esther? Is Esther the hero or the heroine of the story? It's Esther who actually confronts Xerxes and Haman. First of all, she confronts Xerxes on behalf of her people. And now look at this. She pleads, and this is again a kind of risky situation, because you don't want to distress the king, as she says at the end. I don't really want to distress you, king. You know, if we'd just been sold as a nation to be slaves, I wouldn't have bothered you. But actually, we've been sold for destruction, slaughter, and annihilation. And she's very careful how she puts it. If I found favour, and if it pleases your majesty, grant me my life, that is my petition. Spare my people, that is my request. She's the one that actually is at the, if you like, the business end of the story, pleading with the most powerful man, possibly even in the world at the time, her king, and then confronting the enemy as well. Verse 6 of chapter 7, she turns to Haman. You know, the king says, who is the man? Who is the man who would sell your people for destruction, slaughter, and annihilation? The adversary and enemy is this vile Haman. She is the one who actually confronts the people who need to be confronted, takes her life in her hands, awaits what Xerxes will do. Will he favour her? Will he choose her wishes over Haman's wishes? That's a big question. And when she speaks and confronts the king and then Haman, it's really interesting. Haman perceives the power now not to be with Xerxes. He doesn't go outside when Xerxes goes outside and plead with the king. He stays in the queen's quarters and pleads with the queen That's where he perceives that the power is now. And he perceives that Esther's patient and beguiling approach that we unpicked a bit last time has given her the power in the situation over what happens to his life. How did that happen? Well, 11 days ago at our midweek meeting, we were discussing the story, and the men at the meeting were let into some female secrets about how women win men over to their plans without the men even knowing what's happened. And the word was, the women butter them up. They butter up the men. And so us men were given a wee bit of enlightenment to find out what's been going on in our lives. All that time, we're being buttered up. Of course, in the story here, the stakes are high. I mean, it's not just about, you know, the woman getting your man to cut the grass or getting your man to agree to go on holiday where you want to go or something like that. The stakes in the story, I mean, seriously, are mortal. As Esther says, I and my people have been sold for destruction and slaughter and annihilation. And she recognizes, even as she called her people to fast for 3 days before she approached the king, she seems to recognize that it, even what she does won't win the day, and that higher help is needed. Now, the record in Esther doesn't tell us, Esther's inner thoughts doesn't tell us whether in her mind the highest stakes she thought were the lives of her people. Doesn't tell us whether she had a faith personally to see that the higher stakes actually were about God and his faithfulness and his promises to bring blessing to the nations through Israel and through the one born of Israel, through Jesus. We don't know, but in any case, she is the one who seems to bring it all to a head using the tools available to her. Very recently, in the lads' Bible study we do online, we've been reading through Genesis, and you know, just a coin dropped the other day for me reading it. Just what's going on, really. It's like the whole story in Genesis and also right through the Bible is, it's about your nature, human nature, which is a universal thing, human nature on trial. Right from the beginning, it's on trial when Adam and Eve are given one commandment, not to eat of the fruit. And it continues to be on trial right through the Bible story. And every time it's put on trial, it ends the same way, demonstrating the utter failure and the inability of your nature, my nature, the nature of everyone to achieve righteousness ourselves. We just cannot do it. We see it in the story of the garden. We see it when Cain and Abel offer their offerings and Cain kills Abel. We see it before and after the flood story, where even after the flood, under a new godly father, Noah, the people go all wrong again. They form a city to try and do things their own way. We see it when God calls Abraham, a new covenant people. We see it in the new beginnings of the Exodus. We see it in the giving of the law, the giving of the nation, of the land of Canaan as an inheritance, the giving of the tabernacle and the temple to be places of centered on worship, the priesthood, the judges, the kings, the prophets, the exile into Babylon, the return from Babylon, which is kind of where we're at in the history of the Bible in this story. And at every point, there's failure, human failure. Human nature gets told, this is what you need to do. Human nature fails to do it. Just keeps on going like that, the story. And you're part of that story as well. Your human nature gets told what to do. It's happened since your childhood throughout. You get told what to do and you just can't do it. Even your own conscience tells you what to do and you just don't do it. And you continually have the sense, if you're self-aware, that, you know, something about me is wrong. Something about me just doesn't work. And every time throughout the Bible story and in our story, we keep being taught this lesson. If we are willing to hear it, we keep being taught it. Our human nature is broken. Our human nature isn't adequate to be righteous. Isn't able to come to God and say, here I am, as you wanted me to be. Just isn't able to do that. And so, who's the hero? Who's the hero who's going to help us out of that? And the Bible message is, again, if the only hero that you and I needed was a Mordecai or an Esther in every crisis of our lives and of our moral standing, then God would say to us, well, go and find your Esther to fix things. Go and find your hero. Go and find your Mordecai. And the fact is, that's how we're living in the world today. People are constantly living, looking out for the Esther and the Mordecai. They're looking out for heroes who are going to somehow fix the mess that man keeps on making for himself. And again and again, the heroes prove that they're as at fault, that they're as fallible and as broken as everyone else. And we learn again and again, but we don't learn that we shouldn't have put our trust in people who are just like ourselves. Well, us in Esther's day, today, I guess for many people, the problem that they see is that they might die an unpleasant death. None of us wants to die an unpleasant death. And that's what Xerxes, that's what Esther pleads with Xerxes for, that her people will not die an unpleasant death. Of course, this is coming to a fore in Westminster and Holyrood just now with the assisted suicide bills. People seem to think that the thing they need delivered from is dying an unpleasant death. And I think often people don't really know at all what they're talking about when they talk about that. Because the real problem is not that you might die an unpleasant death, either the Jews in Persia or the people of Scotland today. The real problem is what happens when you die and you stand before God. And this is something, obviously, it doesn't get mentioned in the debate about assisted suicide. It is appointed to man once to die, and after that, the judgment. And the judgment of our nature that has been shown from the beginning to the end of the story in the Bible and since, to be worthy of judgment and worthy of condemnation. It's broken. And just as in Xerxes' day, I mean, Xerxes himself, he is he's constantly people plead with Xerxes, Esther particularly, with Xerxes, for the lives of the people, the Jewish people. And Xerxes is seduced, really, into giving in to Esther, not because of justice, but because he's intoxicated by her, seduced. The wine is involved. In Haman's case, sometimes there's money involved. But we can't do that with God. We can't plead with God and offer him something. We can't say, God, if I give you this money, give this money to the church, or if I You know, if I somehow charm you by my life, then you'll give me what I want. It's just not like that. We need someone, not who can plead with Xerxes, or who can plead with the Scottish government, or the Westminster government, or the world leaders, or whatever. We need someone who can plead with God. Mordecai needs that. Esther needs that. We need someone who can plead with God. Who is the hero of this story? Well, you can certainly make an argument that God is the hero, because he's the one that's actually keeping the promises here. He's the one that's actually showing complete integrity in this story, even although he isn't mentioned at all in the book. Remember, Haman is of the Amalekites, and the Amalekites have constantly been trying to annihilate the Jews. And God has promised that he will be at war against the Amalekites. It's in Exodus, when they first attack the Jews coming out of Egypt, from generation to generation. He is keeping his promise here. That's why Haman goes down. Because behind Esther and Mordecai and Xerxes, God is keeping a promise to be at war against those who try to destroy his people. Again, he's keeping this promise we mentioned before a few times to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob: through your offspring, all nations on earth will be blessed. Well, there won't be a blessing if Haman's plan succeeds. So God is ensuring Haman's plan does not succeed. He is the hero. God, in the story, he turns hearts. The king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. He gives wisdom. He gives courage. He turns Xerxes' heart to Esther a first time, and again a second time, when, as we'll see in chapter 8, he extends the scepter, the golden scepter, a second time. So Xerxes is willing to agree to Esther's request because it's God who's in control of his heart. This is the God who keeps Xerxes awake when he's trying to sleep. This is the God who has Xerxes, in the story here, come back in from being outside at the very moment that Haman is falling down on the couch. And Xerxes seems to think that Haman is trying to assault Esther. This is the God who has Esther chosen as queen over all the other beauties from across the Persian Empire. This is the God who has Haman turn up at the very moment Xerxes is looking for someone to honor Mordecai. This is the God who has allowed Haman's evil for his own purposes, only to overturn it for an even greater purpose. God is the hero in the story. He's the hero of human life. He's the one who keeps giving life to us when it doesn't look like we will have life, because our human nature just keeps sabotaging everything that we do. But God keeps blessing. He keeps turning things to keep them from becoming completely self-destructive. Humanity is a mess. It sells newspapers, but we need rescued from it. We need rescued from ourselves. We need rescued even from our heroes, because they're just like ourselves. And it is God whose plan it is to send a man who won't fail like Adam, or like Abraham, or Noah, or Moses, or Aaron, or David, or Mordecai, or Esther, or you, or me. It's God who has the plan to send a man who really can be the hero that we need. And he's not going to let anyone, Haman or anyone else, you or me even, get in the way of that plan. This story is moving towards the great story of the coming of the hero, the coming of Jesus. And it's because of that that Esther has to succeed in pleading for the life of her people. When Jesus comes, human nature just shows itself once again. It shows itself at its worst. You finally have the hero that humanity needs. You have the hero who can deal with human nature. The hero who is without fault, who is filled beyond measure with the Spirit of God, who lives a righteous life, a beautiful life. He's finally here, and we don't recognize him. Or even if we do, we don't want him. And we kill him. We crucify him. We hang him, just as Haman wanted to hang Mordecai. We hang him on a tree. But God is the hero. He's not even going to let that get in the way. In fact, he's going to use that hanging as the place where the one who didn't deserve to die pays for the sins of those who do. And so Jesus is the hero, ultimately, of the story of Esther, of the story of the Bible, and of the story of your life and mine. We need a hero. It's not a Superman. It's not going to come from the ranks of the nations today, because he's already come. The one true righteous man, the Son of God. So who is the hero? Well, it's not Haman, and it's not Xerxes. It's not even Mordecai. It's not even Esther. The hero ultimately in the story is Jesus Christ. And we're called on to recognize that, because this story is just repeated every day in the world. It's repeated in our lives every day. The story of injustices, the story of people making bad choices, the story of people wanting to silence the good voice and favor the voice of temptation. It's that story being told over and over. We need a hero. And we need to recognize, and you need to recognize today, and I need to recognize today, that the hero I need and you need is Jesus Christ. And it's only Jesus who can really rescue us from ourselves, our human nature, our sins, and the judgment of God. And so even in the story, we're being pointed to the failure of human heroes. And we're being pointed to our need of Jesus. And today, we must, you and me, come to him in our prayers and trust him to sort out the mess. Trust him to make us fit to stand before God and ask for his mercy in our lives.